Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run the SFA Online, Fed Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us, we have a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And of course, if you want to, you can also follow, you can listen to it on twitch.tv, especially if you want the video, because the video is not on TalkShoe. I only stream the video on Twitch because of, you know, how the controls I like on TalkShoe. So I do it over on Twitch. And you find us over there on twitch.tv, just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I also have a podcast account called sfuoncall. And of course, then we have my personal account, Paul Franz. It's PaulFranz. Yes, there's no T in that. And if you want to follow me, that's fantastic. So it's a reminder that I'm a huge O's fan. I love being Catholic. And also, I love all kinds of tech, so if you don't like me mentioning any of those, then don't follow me. And of course, if you want to, you can follow my business account, which is for Franz Games, and you can find news about updates for different news from the client updates to new games going Starfleet, Warlord, or any other new products that might be announced through Franz Games. Just a reminder that it's a very low account, so you won't fill up your feed with announcements. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B. I did not see an update about Steve Petrick, but I did see an update from Jean Sexton that she's on her third week of chemotherapy. And, you know, so she's still kind of out of it. She thought she was going to be doing some more posting on Facebook, and I think that the chemo just taken a lot out of her. Obviously, keep her in your thoughts and your prayers, and I think, you know, to help her through these difficult times. And of course, just a reminder, there's plenty of wonderful resources on Starfleet Games. One of the things that is available are some new cards that you can play test that are available for free on Starfleet Games.com. Just go to the resource pages and you should find a page for that. And of course, there is, if you want to learn how to play Starfleet Battles, there's actually a cadet training menu, which is for free. They don't have it on StarfleetGames.com, but they do point you to the different e-tailers, you know, the Drive-Through RPG, Warehouse 23, and also War Game Vault. All of them have a, if you want to, for the cost of a creating an account with one of those e-tailers, you can download a free copy of the Cadet Training Manual. It gives you an introduction into Starfleet Battles and how it is played. So, and it's free. That's, you know, the whole idea is get your interest, see if you actually would like to learn how to play the game. Also, if you want to, there is actually a Twitter account. ADB actually has a Twitter account. I know, it's a shocker. Of course, obviously they have a Facebook account, if that wasn't obvious. And just, if you want to find the Facebook account, just search for Emerald Design Bureau. You'll find them there. Also for the Twitter feed, it's kind of a unique Twitter account. It's ADBINC, you know, like incorporated, _ Amarillo. Now, I'm assuming someone else already took ADB. Big surprise, it's a three-letter Twitter account, so there'd be probably a lot of people who'd want that account. And also, you'd have to get that really, really early on. I was fortunate. I got mine, Paul Franz, which really early on in Twitter. So feel free, you know, to follow me or follow them. Going on to the SFB Online tournament, we still have the Sapphire Star 10 tournament, which is running. There's already half of round one is completed. Actually, there one thing that's interesting, I find fascinating, is that there is one Well, the round one game is started to play. It's good. That's good to see. The tough part is one of the players currently is in Japan. So let's talk about your time difference challenges. That is high on that list. Moving on to online client. I have not done much work on that as of late. I've been busy with other things. There's one thing I really want to work on, and I've done some preliminary work on, which is Starfleet Warlord. I know we have this really cool one, which Derek is working on. But in the meantime, what I wanted to do is just create a really, I was hoping to do something kind of interesting. And that is creating a Warlord client. It's simple, very simple Warlord client. You know, it doesn't have a lot of the fancy smanchy stuff, but allows you to at least, when you're away from your computer, bring up like on your phone or an iPad or a tablet, go to this website, upload the CSV file from your orders. It processes it and says, okay, what do you want to do? You know, and allows you to actually submit your orders via this web page. And I think that would be fantastic, nice and simple. So it allows to get something on the how allow you to do something via the phone or tablet, you know, and submit your orders while you're away. You know, there's certain aspects that I see that are going to be difficult, you know, as in the whole idea of duplicate, you know, I'm not sure what the command is in the aid, but there's a command that you can actually just copy the lines to help you enter in the orders quite quickly. And that's one thing, obviously, I probably have like an icon. You just click on the icon, it'll switch to the next, it'll copy to the next line, things like that, which still, it's going to be, it'd be a lot of work if you have a large order, but I'm assuming that you don't have a large order, and it would help you at least get something done. It might take you quite a bit longer, but at least you can submit it and without having to do something really janky. So when it comes to FedCom libraries, there's no progress there. So with that is the news for this week. And it makes sense. One all, Paul Friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's just me, which is weird because Barry said he was going to be here. But anyhow, since it's just moi, well, actually, Dave's here, and I'm assuming Chris and the gang are probably be showing up on Twitch in any moment now. So welcome, everybody, and welcome if you're just tuning in now to this wonderful podcast. The more the merrier. Hey, Iggy. And tonight, we're going to be going over some more SFB rules, because that's one thing I've started on this journey through the SFB rules. Now, obviously, this is more of an overview of the rules and not actually going in detail for everyone. And actually, some of those... Iggy, if you fell asleep on the couch, you needed to sleep, so no problem there. But yeah, when it comes to the rules, is Daniel, the idea is to give a general overview, because I really never talked about them. Yes, I've actually talked about the FedCom rules. I've talked about some the Starfleet, I'm sorry, the Starmada rules. Never talked about this B rules. So that hurt. So, you know, that's why I wanted to go through this. So, anyhow, it looks like Barry actually is here. Hey, Barry.
Hey there. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. How about yourself?
Down in Nashville.
Oh, cool.
Fly home tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Short weekend. Fly home tomorrow. Get home Saturday. And then fly back down here Sunday.
Wow, that's nuts. You're gonna be home for like one day and then gone.
Yeah. Well, technically, although I arrive at my house at about 3 a.m. on Saturday and I leave Sunday night, so it's over 24 hours.
Yep. still, it's not as nice as having 2 full days, you know.
Yeah, but it was better than just spending the weekend down here with nothing to do.
True. That is true.
And since my company is paying for the trip, it's like, might as well.
Get some more of those wonderful miles on...
Well, let me tell you, my next vacation in May, 2 first-class tickets to Cancun from Philly for free on points.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Oh, just a reminder to you and everyone out there, in 2 weeks, that's 2 weeks, not the next, there will be no podcast. I'm going to be on vacation.
Oh, where are you going?
I'm going down to Virginia, near the Shenandoah Park, down there. So we got Airbnb down there. We'll probably spend some days in the park. I'm not exactly sure what other plans we are, but we'll probably find some local restaurants or something like that and go out to eat a few times. You know, probably do what we normally do. What we did last Airbnb we stayed at is that we had breakfast at the house. And then had dinner out, and so I think we also had, depending upon, you know, the day, we either had dinner in or out. I mean, sorry, lunch in or out. So,
right.
Have, you know,
well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get some hikes in, and also see what else around there. You know, I think it'd be kind of cool. You know?
Yeah, hiking is awesome.
Yep, both my Theta and I, we both got walking poles to help us.
Oh, cool!
For stabilization and so forth, so we don't fall on our faces.
And, yeah.
And you don't have to worry about nearly as much about. People. Yep. Oh yeah.
People with those, that's an awesome idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself.
Oh, I will. It just reminds me of there's a YouTube person I follow, Eva Za something, I forget. She goes, you know, venturing to different places and so forth. Mm-hmm. And one of the things she actually did was walking up this long trail, and she had poles with her. So that's why they remind me of her.
Ah.
You know. Like I said, she's on her...
Well, I'm not doing much.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that basically the one thing that's happening with her at the moment is that she sent her... was it Overland? I think it's Overland. Basically her SUV from Europe and sent it to Mexico. So she's going to be doing traveling, like, I'm assuming up and down North America and South America for the next 1 or 2 years. So that should be interesting to see how that all turns out. Actually, the funny part is that I saw one of the posts on when she announced that she was sending her SUV across the pond, you know. And putting in a ship and sending it across, and that is that one of the posts said, you know, you're probably going to need to do is actually replace the back windows with either at least tinted windows so people can't see in, or metal windows, basically, because people will be more than happy to break into your SUV and steal stuff, you know. Then this guy's from experience from driving in like Mexico. I think he drove from Mexico down to Colombia. Is what this guy did. So,
that is so sad.
Oh, I know. I agree. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. You know, see what she does and she decides to reinforce things when she gets to, when. She actually arrives in Mexico or not, because I know she didn't do that before she left. And obviously she didn't see the the post before we got on the ship and got shipped out. So we'll have to see how that all turns out. You know.
Yeah,
because
so this is someone you listen to, or
yes,
or someone you know, actually know.
No, someone I just follow on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I look at her and go, not me. it's not me, but you know, it's nice because she would do something that I would never ever do, which is, you know, driving around all these places, not actually, well, she kind of plans it to a certain degree where she's going, but she does all this traveling and lives in her little SUV, and it's like, that's not my kind of living is doing that. Though there's another person I follow, Nikki, I forget her last name. And she basically lives in a Prius with her dog. And she drives around. She's got a job and all. She works temp. She has all these kind of temp jobs that she can work, you know, using the computer. And, of course, also gets supported by Patreon and other things on YouTube, too. The supporter. But, you know, she goes around. I couldn't live in my car. You know,
it'd be a bit extreme. I can live in a hotel, but I can't live in a car.
Yeah, I can live. The one thing I have thought about, and I think it'd be really cool to do, especially given my job situation, which is my job at this point, I'm 100% remote. 100% remote.
Yeah.
So, in theory, I could get into like an RV or get a nice trailer, haul it around the United States, and maybe, you know, find a place to park it. You know, like every single weekend, you'll go to the next site or stay to a certain site for like a month or whatever, and then move on to the next location. Because I could, as long as I have access to the internet, then I'm good. You know.
Yeah. Well, here's a bizarre one. Someone who can afford to live anywhere in the world is Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
And his house is what's known as a boxable. Have you heard of boxables?
No, I've not.
Boxable is a company that makes houses that fold up. You can tow it with like a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes like a tiny house, a fairly large tiny house, but a tiny house nevertheless. And Elon Musk said, you know what? I'm going to live in one of these. That'll be my house.
Why not?
All he needs.
Yep. That's the location to park it, then you can go anywhere you want. You know?
Yeah.
So, oh, holy cow.
So,
hold on.
Who's here?
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how are things? Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Hey, happy St. Patrick's Day, yeah. Gotta be St. Patrick's Day.
We're
Kennel Club this week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Also known as the Celtic Cluster.
There.
So how are you doing?
So, not too bad. I called in a couple of weeks ago, but I missed your call in last week, Barry. So I guess it's the first time in a while that we've both been on at the same time.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you been up to?
Not a lot. I mean, just wishing Steve Patrick and Gene and everyone well in terms of all the stuff that's been going on lately, and hoping that things improve. You know, I was talking to Paul a few weeks ago about the new Steam Deck in terms of the clients.
Oh, yeah.
I was listening to you talking about Omega last week and stuff. But yeah, I didn't know if you guys had any plans for a topic or not.
I have a plan for one, but if there's another topic that you want to bring up, I'm more than happy to put it to the side.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Paul, did you say that you do have a copy of both Captain's Log 50 and 52 around somewhere, or no?
Yes, I do have it. Right now it's downstairs. But yeah, I have most of the captain's logs. Some of the older ones I don't have anymore.
Yeah, because just to kind of follow on from the Omega discussion from last time, I was just curious as to whether you'd had a chance to check out any of the playtest material from those books.
To be honest, no. I might have looked at them, but I really haven't had a chance to play them.
Because I don't know if it's the kind of thing that either of you would like to, I guess the two of you guys get a chance to arrange in-person games during the year.
Yep.
I don't know if either of the empires that are up for playtest would interest you guys or not.
Remind me which ones those are.
So, Captain's Log 54 includes a collection of four anti-proton variants for the Bravings of Omega.
Ah.
So either the Yttrians or the Warps?
They use the same anti-proton weapons as the Warp, yeah, and as the Eumatrids.
And what
And this is for FedCom, right?
It's the Paravians.
The Paravians?
Yeah, because in the Omega timeline, the Paravians that are in Omega, they discover the Eumatrian homeworld in the Y206. And then after that, they start digging up samples of anti-proton technology and reverse engineering it for their own ships.
Well, why 206? Is that what you said?
Yeah, Y206.
There's wow. A lot of... Because
they make a timeline goes as far as Y221.
Okay, that's not the same as... Why 206 in the Alpha, right? Or is it considered the same?
Yeah, because the technology advances. But okay, so getting to the quote unquote middle years happens earlier in Omega, but getting out of it again takes later. So, for example, most empires only get Speed 30 cruisers starting in the Y170s.
Right.
And most of those haven't been printed yet, and the earliest war. Class ships like war cruisers, war destroyers, they only show up in Y-187, and they haven't been printed yet either. And the first X-technology ships don't appear until Y-198, and guess what? They haven't been printed either.
So
they're still, like, relatively late in timeline, and you'd see, quote-unquote, modern, like, non-X ships still quite prominent at that time. Because especially after trying to rebuild, after all the damage that's done by the Andromedans and the Soldier. So... the Paravians getting access to the anti-proton technology is part of that. And so in Captain's Log 54, there's a set of four SSDs, playtest ones, basically showing Paravian ships with the anti-proton systems like for people to try out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're SFB rules.
Yes, SFB rules.
Okay.
And SSDs.
Mm-hmm.
And also... in Captain's Log 50 and 52, there are rules and SSDs for the Zosman Marauders, the main pirates of Omega.
Right.
And they actually have ships on shapeways. And also, mm-hmm. The Paravians, okay, so the Paravians from Module C6 have some ships on shapeways. And not coincidentally, the anti-proton variants are based on those ships. So if people want to go out and get the miniatures for the Paravians, then they're welcome to pretend that the same miniature represents its anti-proton variant as well. Because I think we've spoken about both the Paravians and the Zosman Marauders in the past, but I don't know if you had your captain's log with you at the time, Paul. But also, if Barry hasn't been able to see the new stuff for himself, then I guess if you guys get a chance to meet up this year, then maybe that might be a good time to, you know, try them out, like, either against each other or against the Andromedans, or maybe just against, you know, all the Renega empires, just to see how these ships work out.
Well, next time I visit you, Paul, if you want to show me what you've got, I could take a look at it.
Okay. That's weird to me. I'm looking at the Zosman, and they remind me a lot of the Mezeron. When it comes to the shape of the ships, let me just double check that, because I brought it up on Shapeways and went, man, that reminds me of, yeah, it's akin to it. It's not the same, obviously, but it's kind of the same kind of boxy shape.
Well, the main thing about these guys is the stealth field, because I'm not too sure how the stealth field would work in a tournament setting. That's the only thing, because the stealth field is designed to work in like regular SFB. So, for example, if you're using things like passive fire control or tactical intelligence, that sort of things, because when the stealth field is running, it's both the Zosman ship itself and the ship it's fighting both have to act as if they're under passive fire control. And also, when the stealth field is running, the level, you can't see the ship until you reach a certain tactical intelligence level. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, you have to be only so far away from it before that you can actually detect that it's there. So, because that kind of factors into their ability to basically sneak around the octant without being disturbed, whatever.
Right.
At a tactical level, that might be tricky, because in a tournament level, even like a cloaking device or anything like that doesn't really. I mean, you still know that the ship is there. It's just that, you know, it manifests in a different way. Because, like, in SRB or FedCon, you can cloak indefinitely, but I don't think that's true in the tournament. So I don't know whether there needs to be some sort of equivalent thing for stealth fields. Well, I mean, there's probably a way to disqualify the player for doing that, but and also there's the whole idea of the optional weapons, because similar to pirates in other regions of the universe, the Zosmans have modular weapons and phasers, so in theory you could mix and match whatever type you like, but in practice there aren't a lot of weapon mounts per ship class, so it's generally, each ship is generally designed, it's like, oh, I guess it's best to kind of stick with one type of system at a time and focus on that. And also, to give you a comparison, in Captain's Log 52, there's an update file that includes more historical data in terms of, you know, how they work, and also what weapons are available to them. And in their home space, when they're defending it, say, against the Andromedans or Soldier or whatever, they actually use Mistron. The standardized weapons that they use are Mistron types, so that's why Angle Phasers, Tachyon Guns, and Tachyon Missiles. So, for example, the Zosman Heavy Cruiser, it's got enough room for 6 phasers, 3 on either side, hemispheric, and it's also got the two weapon modules on the front, so that's enough room for 4 heavy weapons. And you can pay extra to give them front hemisphere arcs instead of FA arcs as well. But then there's a few other things, like there's lots of boarding parties, there's lots of shuttles, as you can imagine. They can take FRA shuttle bombs, but they can't take as many as the FRA can. So you've got a few advantages in terms of, like, using shuttle bombs instead of using regular shuttles, so that sort of thing. So and there's two little kind of, like, you know, pluses and minuses. I guess it's like, I'm trying to think of an example, because the Orions aren't a good example, because the engine doubling, because the Zosmans don't have engine doubling, they just have, like, regular engine output. But, yeah, basically, I suppose if you ever did an LMC campaign and you had the Jumokian, ship in that, you wouldn't expect the ship to have the same option mounts as like an Amino petabyte, but it would. You'd have to see whether it's compensated in other ways. So.
Yeah. Remind me, I'm pretty sure I remember this correctly, but when it comes to the shuttle bombs, weren't they originally created by the FRA? Or am I remembering
that's
that?
Correct.
Yeah.
So basically, there's also steel examples of them. They reverse engineer them, but only to a limited extent. So, because the FRA themselves, they refine the shuttle bomb technology. So, for example, when they first deploy them, you can replace a single admin with two shuttle bombs. But then they miniaturize them, and so you can replace a shuttle, an admin shuttle with three shuttle bombs. But the Zosmans never figured that bit out, so the Zosmans were only able to replace one admin shuttle for two shuttle bombs. And so it's actually, by the way, the Belasco get limited access to shuttle bombs too, because the FRA sell them to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was ever to be a Belasco tournament cruiser, then that'd be a question: are they allowed to take a limited number of shuttle bombs themselves?
That was the Belasco, you said?
Yeah, so basically the FRA has an agreement with the Belasco.
Yeah, the Belasco traders, they were big into tractor technology, if I remember correctly.
That's exactly right. And a lot of their technology is unique, so the Zosmans can't use it. So anything like but also the two factions, like, historically have a large grievance, so Belasco versus Osmo would be a very common historical battle. So, like, how well it would work out in game terms is, like, I guess that's hopefully what playtesting would determine. But
yeah, well, they would be, well, certainly one are the traitors and the other ones are the pirates that are attacking them, or traditionally attacking them, or raiding them, I should say.
Yeah, one of the things that what surprised me with the Zosmans is that I was confusing the Zosmans with the old Galaxy Pirates, which are totally different ship designs.
Oh yeah, those are the guys with the oversized wings on the port side,
right?
That they can use to dock with freighters and carry them off.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there is a miniature ship race for that too. It's quite big, actually. Like, it's big enough so that you can actually fit a freighter underneath it, I suppose.
Oh wow!
But,
come on, Segway's a little slow. Wow! Look at the Yamantrion. Is that how you pronounce that? Imantrion? Starts with the Y? Y-M-A-T-R-I-A-N?
Yeah, they use the antiprotons and lasers, right, and the antiproton beams and the antiproton lances.
They look kind of neat overall. The battle axe, I'm looking at that going, you know, that reminds me a lot of the Drex, because it has the little like pyramids at the
firing arcs are so narrow.
No, I'm looking at the shapeways, because the battle axe has these kind of triangles at the front of the ship for each of the what were those things called, pylons. And that reminds me of Drex. I'm pretty sure the Drex has the same. Is it the Drex has all the same thing? Or am I thinking of something else?
Well, there are Drex miniatures on Shapeways as well, if you want to compare them.
Okay, so it wasn't Drex. Oh, it was. What's the one with dark energy? The dark energy.
The Soldra. Soldra.
Ah, I think that's what I'm thinking of. I think about the Soldra, not the Drex. I'll take a bring up a soldier real quick for those watching the video. Come on, I did click that, right? Let's try that again. Oh, there it goes. Must have missed it. No, they're little spiky things. Okay, I must just confused them. Okay. Tells you how often I actually look at the Omega ships. But yeah, I think that'd be cool. You know, next time we get together, maybe play test some of that stuff. You know, whether it's when you stop by the house or when we get together at Harrisburg. I forget.
Either one will work.
Yeah, I know the normal place we've been getting together for games of winter and games of summer. They are currently
going away.
Yeah. So you heard about that?
Yeah. I talk to Doug frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he posted up on Facebook, so that's how I found out. So it's like, oh,
yeah.
So he's
I call him. About once a week or so.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me. I got to give my brother.
I had something bizarre happen.
What's that? What
happened to me? So Sunday I was traveling down to Nashville, and I ran into my daughter at the airport.
Small world.
Yeah.
You mean the one that lives in Seattle, I think it is, or Washington at least?
No, the one that lives in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was using an airport I don't normally use. I was using Dulles, but she doesn't normally travel for business.
Mm-hmm.
But she was that day, and it was just like, hey. That doesn't happen these days that much.
Oh, a great hit.
That was kind of cool.
Oh, understood. Yeah. I probably won't be seeing my brothers until July, which will be normal July 4th party that we have every year.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's nice to get together. I'll be there. I'm not sure if my wife or I don't think my daughter will be. I think she just prefers to. Groups really stress her out and drain her, becomes energy wise, you know.
Oh.
So she's not good for that. But anyway, that'd be cool, you know, when we get together to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't play ASL on SLB Online. Kristen is talking to Iggy about getting together this Saturday. But anyhow, yeah, actually, I brought one. I did not realize they had it, which is the Kari's. Sabres has the Kari's. Yeah, the Kari's. Remember? Do you remember the C4 races? Or sorry, Empire. Sorry, Gene.
Yeah, I vaguely.
Shark Hunters, the Kari's, what's the ones for the ISC? They're simulated race.
That's the Barbarians, I think.
Barbarians, yes, thank you. I can picture the
number of frack ships on there, I think.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, when it comes to Barbarians, I could remember. I could picture the ships because they're very ordinary and plain. Big surprise because of that. They're just simulator races that the ISC use to simulate the Barbarians at the door. You know, the Romulans and the Gorns and the Federation and all of them. You know. Yeah, and of course, the interesting part about the Kari's was that, of course, they were basically tanks. It's Iraqi spelled backwards. Iraq spelled backwards. I think that was the whole idea of it. What's the whole idea of having a Tourant is interesting, and it's not just the Kari. Who was it? Who's another one that actually has a Tourant weapon?
There are several races with turrets. The Warb has them.
Yeah, I think the was that the
Warb. A few others.
I think it's the Warb I was thinking of. Bringing that up right now.
So okay. There's the Warb, yes, and then also the Borek.
Yes, yes, the Borek.
And the Imperium in a Triangulum Galaxy.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one thing that they don't have. I don't think they have any of the ships from the Triangulum Galaxy. Actually, that's what I'm thinking of. LMC is what I'm thinking of. Is because obviously the Triangulum, that's still a long way off from actually, it's still in playtest. It has been in playtest for a long time. I'm not sure that will ever be completed. Just like the Tholian, the original, the old galaxy Tholians, and the information about that and the different empires there, which that. I'm not sure where that is, because I think originally was set up to be for Prime Directive, and then they were going to build off of that. That's my remembrance. It's been many, many a year since I actually talked. I even heard about the Tholians. And when it comes to going back to the old galaxy, you know, and the whole history of the Tholians back in the old galaxy, which I'm sure, just like me, I'm interested. I'm sure Gary's interested in too. I think Gary and I talked about it a bit in the past.
Yeah, because the home galaxy is M81, and there's a discussion thread on the BBS to try to basically figure out like what an M81 module would look like in terms of what new empires would be needed. And how do it all fit together and stuff. And I think there's like a couple of things, like for example, any of the enforcer species that existed before the Saltorians.
Right, right.
Just use Saltorian ships, but there's no point in giving them, because basically the idea would be that the Tholians would basically keep the blueprints on file, and then every time a current enforcer species rebels, then they'd crush them, and then they'd uplift some other species and say, all right, these are the ships you're using, and then they know what to expect when the next rebellion happens. But at least until the whole Leadbreaker thing came out.
Right.
But the main difference for M81 would be you'd probably need at least three, because there's we were also talking about this in the past, but there was an article in Captain's Log before talking about this thing called the Great Martial War, which is basically kind of like one of the massive big wars of conquest that took place. And in that war, there were three major empires that the Tholians fought. And one of them, the guys who are the originators of the pirate ship. So, as we mentioned, the pirate ships have those big wings. So
right.
The ones without the same empire would build ships without those wings, and they would be the regular navy ships. So, and also, supposedly, those guys would have unique technology that allows them an advantage when they're fighting inside a nebula. So if you think about how the Kixa have an advantage when they're fighting in the Kixavlor cloud,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of like equivalent mm-hmm. to that, but nebula terrain instead of Kixavlor. To be those fly is never get fully conquered, because even if they're swept from open space, they can hide on those nebulae, and the Tholians, their enforcers, would have a tough time trying to get in there to them out, because, as you know, web doesn't really work, except for I think the only function that works in a web, in a nebula rather, web casting, is under the very limits, that restrictions that direct fire weapons have in a nebula.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be actually quite difficult for the Tholians to get in there and, you know, sort them out.
Right.
But if we don't know what that technology looks like either. So, but that would be pretty interesting though. I mean, just balance the campaign so that they have they can win, but it's not a given to them. Like,
right.
I would, they had to really earn it, you know. Or that if they're playing at, say, like a Federation Empire level or something, that the other guys have a chance of winning, even if it's like a 40-60 chance.
Yep. Yeah. As we talked about before, I'd be interested in that. It's, at the moment, at the life of ADB, or more importantly, the designer and the current crew, you know, not so sure if that's ever going to come to fruition, you know.
Well, for what it's worth, one of the reasons why the conversation actually picked up again is because in the Tholian Master Starship book, and also in the recent module R4T, there's actually a significant section that's basically kind of like a background info for the home galaxy Tholians in terms of like what ships they use, how you can deploy them, auxiliary units that they use, both that the Tholians themselves use and that their subject species use.
Right.
So that you can basically begin the process of, figuring out how the home galaxy will work in that sense. Like, basically, this is like the first time, I should say, that level of detail was ever given. So, now, I don't know if there's ever going to be a Sultorian Master Starship book, but if there was, then in theory, one could basically see a similar section given for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've done that, you're basically, you're moving things further along to the point where you could actually sit down and think very seriously in terms of like, all right, well, you know, how can you actually take these building blocks and turn them into something that people would want to play? You know?
Right. Well, the tough part is background, in my mind, you know, the background of the empires is probably easier to do than actually fleshing out rules and weapons and ships that are related to those empires. Because
you wouldn't need to worry. Yeah.
Because at the same time, especially for subject races, if you want to have something that's in it before they are to become subject races, you have the whole issue of the LMC problem all over again. And the problem with the LMC, you know, when Ken Burnside created those empires for the LMC, one of the most difficult problems that you can ever have. And that is you have to create empires that are strong enough to fight each other's, and they're relatively strong, ships, but they have to be able to be defeated by the Andromedans without any improvements and so forth. So there has to be, because obviously the Andromedans invade the LMC and take over. You know, and there's not much of the original empires left. You know, they're running it, they're hiding for the most part. You know, and so the ships have to be weak enough that they can't really fend off the Andromedans. You know, so that to me that is a difficult position to be put in. You know.
Well. Individually, the ships might be strong. So that's another possibility, is just have ships that individually are strong, but they just didn't have the production to crank out the numbers so they could get swarmed over by the Andromedans. It's like, okay, you know, I've got my cruiser's better than your cruiser. Yeah, but you're facing a Dominator.
That is true, but at the same time...
Well, they do have rules...
Yeah, well, I was going to say is that, but the thing is, the Andromedans, there weren't a large fleet. You know, if you think about it, the Andromedans didn't have a really huge fleet when they were fighting. Their big advantage was their strategic advantage of the RTN, where they could, you know, obviously, satellite ships were, for the most part, throwaway to a certain degree. You know, they had the most of. The whole thing, the motherships were not as, you know, disposable, you know, and so
right.
those have to survive, and you know, and you have to be able to almost defeat the other empires using those ships, you know, and when you right, when right. you we don't have
just limited the number of yeah if mm-hmm. if the Federation has, you know, 50-60 cruisers as for their empire with, you know, 10 dreadnoughts and what are the bugs? The LCS, LMC bugs. What are they called again?
Magadium.
If the Magadium had two or three cruisers for their whole empire, well, it doesn't matter how good those cruisers are. Within, you know, even if they're just as powerful as a Fed cruiser, but the Fed has 50, 60 cruisers to their two or three, you know, the Andromedans can walk over them.
Well, there are rules in SFE Module C5 that, for example, in a standard scenario, after you've selected your flagship, you can only select one size class 3 ship for every three size class 4 ships in the galaxy. So that's cruiser, frigate, cruiser, destroyer. And also, it's noted that when it comes to operational speed, because like we'll have to see what Ethany and Andrew War says about this, but generally speaking, Andromedan ships, even if they're faster on the RTN than other empires, they're slower than a modern ship like a Federation CA or Klingon D7. Like they can go about 6 hexes a turn in operational movement in SFB in spent empire terms. But whatever speed the Andromedans go, when they're not on the RTN, is slower than that. Now, because it hasn't been said how much slower, but whatever it is. But it does say in Module C5 that the LMC empires are themselves, their ships are no faster than the Andromedans off the RTN.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically means that the Andros have a relatively larger advantage strategically against the LMC empires than they do against in the Alpha or Omega Gardens.
Mm-hmm. So the Andros are not your RTN is not as critical for them. Or in specific, sure. if the Andromedans are off the RTN and they run into a bigger fleet, they have the possibility of oh crap, run away and get away.
And also, it says that there are more historical examples when they don't need to worry about the 2 div dead limit. They could just switch off the div deads and mass forces together because they don't have to worry about being outrun by the Magellanic Empires.
Right, because the limitation on the Dizdev are the use of the Dizdevs, really.
Right.
Of course, you'd still have the tactical limit of the Dizdev in terms of, like, you can't use more than two, like, to display ships and stuff. But, as I say, in terms of just switching off the Dizdevs on the additional ships or on the previous ones, you can you have more leeway than you would in other parts of space. But to get back to N91, the thing with the Tholians is though, with that, when you think about it, if they can take a fleet of 12 ships and they can take 2 battleships and they've all got webcasters, you know, there's not a lot you can, if you have an equal number of ships and if you don't have web breakers, then that in itself is a challenge. So the trick would be, I mean, it's less of a, like it would be basically, in a straight up fight, it would be a challenge to come up with an empire that could stand up against that. But, you know, at the operational or strategic level, maybe there are other ways. Like maybe there's just, you know, bigger numbers on the side of their enemies so that, yes, if the Tholians can afford to pick their battles, then, you know, they have the advantage. But if their enemies can, you know, try to work around that or, you know, try to basically concentrate more forces together or something, then, you know, they can, or make it so that they're attacking on so many different fronts that the Tholians don't have the luxury of massing their own forces until they really get the campaign going. Like, you know, if you've only got so many Tholian ships and you've got so many different, you know, hexes or provinces that you have to try to cover, then maybe the enemy guys, they can try to basically put pressure and that's it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, and as
of course, that's
actually I was just gonna point out one thing about the Andromedan. There was an article in Capsule number 49 called "A Bridge Between Galaxies," which is very interesting. That's what the chat room is mentioning about them, and I have to I think I've read that article. I just have to go back and revisit it to see what that article was truly about. Dave just mentioned that it explains the RTN. Yes, Gary?
Well, it gives theories in terms of like how the RTN was built. And so there's different, basically, different empires have different ideas. But the thing is that there hasn't been a lot of much in the way of direct evidence to kind of prove which is one way or the other. So.
Right. It's hard to pick up the pieces after they've been destroyed, basically. You know, and when there's no evidence of it beforehand. You know, them actually setting up the networks.
The Andromedans have a super RTN to get from Andromeda to the LMC?
Yeah, that's what the intergalactic trunk line is.
Right.
So, although, actually, I personally think, of course, I don't have any ADB level insight on this, but I wouldn't be surprised if because the whole idea is, when it comes to galaxies in the SFU, is that they have energy barriers.
Right.
So the Milky Way has a strong energy barrier, and that kind of messed things up for the Tholians and the Blasco. But then also, M81 apparently has a barrier, but it's relatively weak, which is why the Tholians didn't think much of our barrier until it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if maybe the Andromedan barrier, because Andromeda is such a big galaxy, maybe their barrier is actually as strong or stronger than our barrier. So maybe the Andromedans didn't actually send the invasion from their home galaxy directly. Maybe mm-hmm. what they did is that they picked off one of Andromeda satellite galaxies and then used that to launch the invasion of the LMC.
Hey guys, I have a really early wake up, so I need to get to sleep.
Okay. Have a good night, Barry.
Good night.
Okay, bye.
Good night.
Have a night.
Yep. Yeah, which is always interesting, because the question is, by the time the Andromedans invade the LMC, where have they gone in the universe? You know, did they directly go from, like, you know, it's your supposition, your theory going, which is, there's a kind of a satellite galaxy, a smaller galaxy near the Andromedan galaxy that they invaded first and used that as a jumping off point. Or did they, or were there other galaxies that they had invaded and successfully taken over in the universe? You know, or of course, in some cases, I would think they also had, in some cases, they had failed, you know?
Well, I'm hoping that, if we ever do see more of Triangulum, that the Andromedans do an invasion there. But that would have to be the figuring that out too, because the thing is that, I mean, if you open up Wikipedia and look up the local group of galaxies, both the Milky Way and Andromeda have plenty of satellite galaxies that, you know, we from Earth can see and decide. So you can basically pick off one and say, all right, well, that one is used by the Andromedans and this and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that, so far as we know, Triangulum, at least from our perspective here,
right,
in the Milky Way, we can't see whether or not Triangulum has a satellite galaxy. So it has a bunch of like smaller little kind of globular clusters that are orbiting us, and we don't know what's on the far side of Dranglin from us, but you'd have to basically try to figure out some the logistics behind what the Andromedans will do. But then on the flip side, because Triangulum is a smaller galaxy than either Milky Way or Andromeda, it could be that if they have a galactic barrier, then it's weaker as well, so that maybe the Andromedans would feel confident enough to, you know, land on it directly. But then, you know, so it's, there's lots of things to kind of figure out. Because I think the other thing is that I think that one of the big issues for the Andromedans would be that they're very keen on reconning a location before they commit.
Right.
So, like, think how long it took for them to build up in the Milky Way before the invasion started. And even in the LMC, they waited until their main star base was built before they kicked things off.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if they do basically avoid direct connections to other galaxies, other major galaxies, rather, without first, you know, thinking of the stepping stones to get there.
Yeah, actually, that brings up the whole idea of the Andromedans are very careful about their scouting. That just brings up a question in my mind overall, which is, of course, the Zerkalians. Because the Zerkalians were part of another section of our galaxy. You know, if the Andromedans had planned on first taking over the LMC and then invading the Milky Way, my question is, did they take into account the Zerkalians, or were they just going to leave them by themselves? You know, or did they even know about the Zerkalians?
Well, I think that it might be too much pressure, but in FNE terms, to put the entire galaxy's invasion in the LMC. Because, I mean, even between Alpha and Omega, that's just like their full-time occupations, basically. Like, just basically trying to keep enough supplies of ships and material going to manage those invasions. I don't know whether or not it would make sense to basically say that any of the parts of the galaxy were from that. So I wonder if it might be better to have a look at another satellite galaxy of the Milky Way and say that the Andromedans sent a separate trunk line to that place. And then maybe if it's further on the opposite side of the galaxy, maybe they use that to go after Sigma or the Zerkalians or whatever.
Right, right. I mean, they might have been had their butt kicked at that point. Because my understanding is that Zerkalians are very powerful. You know, that's why we need basically second generation X ships just to have be able to defeat them. You know, of course, they might have just been just like the Alpha Octant, which is slowly built up over time. You know, their technology, you know. And of course, the Andromedans were Y-160 is when they first were seen. Do I have that right?
Y-166.
Okay, Y-166. Okay. So, which is, that's like middle years for the Alpha, if I'm getting that right.
They were just in the process of beginning refits and stuff. So it was like transitionally, basically, between the end of the Four Powers War and the beginning of the General War.
Right. And and they were still kind of... See, that's always the question. And that is... Okay, it brings up the other question, which is, of course, that... Okay, they sent in the original invasion force. You know, that's what we saw in Y-166. Started seeing them in Y-166. You know, but those were still kind of scouting out to a certain degree. At least that's what I'm imagining. You know, because by that time they already had built the trunk to the LMC. So do they first build the trunk and then send out scouts and invade, or do they, you know, do they have scout ships that are that first go to another galaxy, investigate, and then they build the trunk, which of course takes, I'm not sure how long it would take to actually build a trunk from the Andromeda Galaxy to the LMC. You know?
Well, so they first show up in the LMC in Y-138, and the theory, I guess, based on the Trunkline article is that they've been building. So part of the thing as well is that the Alpha Empires, they're basically kind of figuring out or trying to, you know, work out how Andromeda logistics work on the fly. So even up to Operation Unity, there was no real understanding about how the trunk line, like whether the trunk line would be any different to regular RTN link. So in other words, does it use regular satellite bases or not?
Right.
And if it does, how many do you need to stretch all the way to Andromeda? So according to the info on CL-49, they got there, they destroyed the second and third desecrators, and they realized that it did something. It was a major change. Basically, it kind of like, it cut the flow, but then the question was, well, what was that flow? So they sent ships they pointed ships towards Andromeda and sent them off to take a year's worth of travel, and they didn't find anything. So then the theories basically started changing in terms of like, okay, well, look, if the current satellite bases that we know of didn't work, then what would work? So then you got the question of, well, maybe the trunk line bases are like a specific type that are customized for, like, okay, say if you're in a country like South Korea or Japan,
mm-hmm.
and you've got your subway and local transit lines, and then also you've got like your old style trains and stuff, but then you've got like the high speed rail, like the KTX or Shinkansen, and you really need to basically have dedicated tracks to run those. So you can't. Maybe a better comparison would be because in Japan there's that new maglev line that they're trying to build between Osaka and Tokyo.
Right.
It has to have an entirely new network, and because the maglev trains can't run on regular tracks, they have to be on specific maglev tracks.
Right.
Because they're basically floating over the track. So, in that sense, if you think about it, basically there might well be some sort of thing that's about the ITLs or the trunk line for the Andromedans that is incompatible with the regular RTN. So maybe the theory would be that instead of having it 1 year apart, maybe the bases are 20 years apart or 10 years or 13 or whatever distance the Andromedan engineers, because even they would have to have engineering limits, I think. They're not just magic murder. So they would basically have to work with. So, without giving too much away from the article, basically the idea is that the feds think that there's a new kind of mothership called an installer, which we don't really haven't seen yet, which is only designed to place trunk line bases. And their theory would be that they basically have a buddy system where, like, one would travel 20 years, stop, activate the station, and then the second one would follow up. That will basically go from there another 20 years and set its station. And so there would be faster travel from up to the terminus point that you've built.
Right.
But not as fast as it would be when you get the Starbase built at the far end. So, then the Klingons apparently think that there's a ship called a roadbed class, they call, which basically travels for 20 years and then stops and becomes the station. So, but whatever these bases are like, they're most likely too weak to stand any kind of attack. So that might be a reason why they didn't build one adjacent to the LMC, because it was too vulnerable. So instead, maybe the last leg of the journey, they sent the first motherships into the LMC on the slow boat route. And so they basically kind of drip-fed them the last leg of the journey until there was enough of them and enough resources to build the first desecrator. And then once the network fully activated with Starbase up and running, then they can start pouring in enough more units and stuff. But I mean, again, like, until more is basically revealed on that, which may never happen because, you know, there's always that element of what's going on with the Andros.
Right. Agreed.
I can say for sure if that's actually really what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally agree, because no one even knows what Andromeda looks like, but to be honest about that, about the Andromedans, my theory has always been that Andromedans are either robots themselves or the ships themselves are actually Andromedans, basically. They're completely electronic intelligence.
Well, it has been said that they're very interested in the Drex. There was one time where they tried to install a computer virus on the Drex ship to take it over, but it didn't really stick. It drove the Drex ship berserk, but they weren't able to, like, override its programming.
Right.
So, you know, it's a theory. I mean, I think it's probably, you know, I think it's good that they'll probably never say which one it is, because that's, like,
oh yeah,
the one empire where that's okay for.
Right. Agreed. That's a mystery that will never be revealed. And to be honest, I don't think anyone wants it to be revealed. It's always that kind of quirky thing that you always are wondering about, curious about, you know, thinking about, you know. Well, it's always one of those things left up in the air, and you can have long discussion on what the Andromedans, what their final goal was. You know, why are they doing what they're doing? You know, what do they look like? You know, there's so many questions. You know, and I think people like it that way, to be honest.
Well, just one final thing I wanted to suggest as well is we don't have a lot of info, even though, as I said, there is some Freudian preview stuff in Captain Block 54. There's no update file quite yet in terms of, like, explaining how the Praetorians got there.
Mm-hmm.
So, officially, it's not 100% confirmed that they would use the same, like, phasers and quantum wave torpedoes before, like, that they would have used in Module C6.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I personally would prefer it be the case, but until it's officially confirmed, then we'll have to wait and see. But in any event, I do still think that, even with that major caveat in mind, I do think that in terms of basically playtesting the mega ships, I do think that even if only just to see how it works, mm-hmm. I do think that... you know, having a look at some of the Praetorian ships in Module C6, at least the middle years ones, like heavy cruiser and light cruiser and stuff,
right.
I think it would be interesting to see how they pan out against Omega, you know, equivalent ships. So, if it turns out that it actually will happen, then I guess that's great. And if not, then, you know, at least it's hopefully not an entire waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
But because I think one thing as well is that if I recall correctly, and I can't remember when this was said, but or if I'm pretty sure it was said somewhere. But if I recall correctly, you know how, like, certain phasers have a different ratio against plasma?
Right. And I know Barry's always complained about that when it comes to the Andromeda, when it comes to the Omegas.
Yeah. So, actually, the reverse is true for the LMC Empires, because their warp tuned lasers are weaker against plasma. But if I recall correctly, there's no ratio adjustment for quantum wave torpedoes, because they're not plasma torpedoes. I mean, they follow certain plasma rules, but... I believe they're different enough. If I'm mistaken, my apologies, but I believe they're different enough so that doesn't happen.
Right.
So if you are like taking a ship like a Kolaghan ship, or if you're taking a Zosman ship that's using Kolaghan weapons, then you won't necessarily have the same advantage against the Praetorians that you would against quote unquote plasma empires.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Oh, also when it comes to my theory about the Andromedans, one thing that actually Dave pointed out in the chat room is that the Soldra can't drain life from the Andromedans, which tells me they don't have, in my mind, biological, they're not a biological life force. So,
or they could be so alien that even the Soldra are not compatible with their form of life, whatever it is.
That is possible, but I still think they're completely a electronic, life form. Because I'm assuming the Soldra can drain life force from the Tholians, which are very different when it comes to life. They're rock based, basically.
Well, more crystalline, but yes, the Soldra can feed on Tholians.
Mm-hmm. So.
And the Troburn as well, the silicon based does in an alien. Oh, actually, that reminds me, because you were talking last week about the context that Omega phases are in.
Mm-hmm.
I would point out that historically, those phases are used in an electronic warfare environment. So when you have wide angle phasers, sure, the phaser chart table doesn't look great, but bear in mind that if you have a shift, then the idea behind the wide angle phaser is that it retains a portion of its strength, even if you're dealing with a negative shift.
Right.
Whereas other phaser types maybe have more difficulty in that sense. So I guess there is a method to the madness.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when it comes to things like radiation phasers, Troban ships usually have much fewer phasers than other empires to counteract the fact that they've got such heavy weapons. And again, same thing with the Zosman Marauder. So if you have a Zosman in Troban space, your ship's only going to have so many radiation phases to work with. So yes, as you were saying, the phases themselves might be useful, but how many of them you actually have to use for the story?
Yep. Agreed. Actually, going back to the Soldra just for a moment, and that is, I was just thinking about, what about the Brantheon, the dragon empire? Do they have anything special for them?
Okay, so...
Because they're a living creature.
I think that the main thing is that, so they can feed on living creatures. It's just that... there's something about the way it works, because yes, when you're attacking a Brantheon ship, the damage is divided between the dragon part and the exoskeleton part.
Right.
It's like, I can't remember if it's like a faster damage when you try to, if you're absorbing the exoskeleton. I can't remember how. I don't have the rule in front of me.
Right.
But I do remember that. For comparison's sake, if you have like the Sigurians, they can't infect the dragon, but they can assimilate, or if they infect the crew. So if you're able to get on board and take over the crew, then basically the ship becomes yours. The dragon ship becomes yours anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the Soldra, I mean, I guess you'd have to double check in the Omega Master Rulebook, but there is a specific set of interactions that they have with both them and the Alunda as well. But I just couldn't tell you what they were writing.
Understood. Okay. Well, things are starting to get a little late around here, so I think we will close with that thought. Gary, it was wonderful to have you. Don't be a stranger.
Thank you. And once again, happy Patrick's Day to everybody.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, have a happy Patrick's Day for what's left of it. Okay. See ya. Okay. So, We got to this little discussion there about omegas and the Andromedans. Lord knows, I cannot help myself when it comes to Andromedans. We talk about them. I could talk about them to the to the end of time itself. You know, because there's so many things you can discuss about them and different ideas about them, different theories about, you know, how they think, you know, and so forth. And of course, I've need to go downstairs and go grab my captain's logs and read up on those playtest rules so that I can play them with Barry and explain them. Obviously, explain them to Barry because that's kind of important. You know, make some copies of the ships and so forth. I've got a nice printer here, and it also acts as a copying machine. You know, one of those all-in-ones, and that'll work great. So, anyhow. With that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.